inhumane. It is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Damn the pussy man!
Broadcasting from the Gulag filling station of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and tonight we present a program produced by the Chorus Radio Network out of Vancouver. We have extracts from the Bill Good Show with the sub-host of Peter Warren, and guests include Kirk Atuza of the Canadian Civil Liberties Union, Eugene Oscapella, a barrister and author of an essay that shows how our current drug war policies fund terrorists like Osama bin Laden. We'll also hear from Keith Stropp, head of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and we'll also hear from Peter Cohen out of Amsterdam and the situation in their country. Okay, before we go to the Bill Good Show, I want to read a little bit of news. This first story comes to us from the Saturday New York Times. The Dark Side of America. The sickening pictures of American troops humiliating Iraqi prisoners have led inevitably to questions about the standards of treatment in the corrections system at home, which has grown tenfold over the last 30 years and now jails people at 8 times the rate of France and 6 times the rate of Canada. Conditions vary widely from state to state and community to community, but as the Times' Fox Butterfield reported recently, some of the chilling pictures from Iraq, such as the ones of inmates being paraded around naked, could have been taken at some American prisons, and humiliation by prison guards is far from the first thing on most American inmates' list of worries. The nearly 12 million people who pass through the correction system each year are often subject to violent attacks by other inmates, and prisoner-on-prisoner rape is endemic. Drug-resistant strains of tuberculosis, easily transmitted in tight places, have become a common problem. Illegal drugs ferried in by prison employees and used by inmates who share needles have made prison a high-risk setting for HIV infection and most recently the liver-destroying hepatitis C. Some prisons have actually cut back on testing for disease rather than risk being required to treat large numbers of infected inmates at bankrupting costs. That means, of course, that released inmates will unknowingly pass on diseases to others. It's hard to quantify how many American prisoners are abused or allowed to suffer from untreated illness since the system operates largely in the shadows, outside public scrutiny. Last year, when Congress passed the Prison Rape Elimination Act, ordering the Justice Department to collect data on this serious problem and to create a mechanism for dealing with it, prison officials predictably downplay rape as a problem. But a harrowing report from Human Rights Watch suggested that prisoner-on-prisoner rape accompanied by savage violence was commonplace and that officials often looked the other way. This is my addition. More than 100,000 male-on-male prison rapes are reported each year in the U.S., and it is believed that many times more than that go unreported. Back to the New York Times. Psychiatric care for psychotic inmates is poor to non-existent. The prison system can no longer be seen as the province of prison officials who cover up or mismanage problems that eventually come back to haunt the rest of society. The country needs to formulate national prison standards and create an independent body that enforces them, if only by opening prisons to greater public scrutiny. Here's an additional announcement. The third national conference on cannabis therapeutics will start on May 20th, and the purpose of this conference series is to resurrect the knowledge base of therapeutic cannabis. Virtually no academic medical education concerning therapeutic cannabis has been provided to MDs and RNs in the United States since 1938. This conference brings replicated science-based research to clinicians, patients, the press, and the public so they can make informed decisions about therapeutic cannabis use. This conference will be held in Charlottesville, North Carolina. This next story comes to us from Mothering Magazine, which includes the first-person account of a mother's struggle with morning sickness so severe it threatened her health and that of her unborn baby. Marijuana helped where conventional medications did not. While pregnant women are wisely advised to steer clear of all unnecessary medication and chemicals, marijuana has been proven to be far safer and frequently more effective than other anti-emetics. This next story comes to us out of Canada. The weight of Bayer Pharmaceutical Company is now behind marketing a cannabis spray for MS patients and other pain sufferers, and Canada may soon approve its distribution there. The spray delivers a whole plant compound without smoking or inhaling. This next story comes to us from Vermont. The Vermont bill to permit medical use of marijuana by qualifying patients crossed another hurdle this week, moving one step closer to a full vote. Despite efforts by the Republican leadership to quash the bill, their governor has said he opposes. Republican leaders have made clear they want to avoid having the governor veto a measure that polls show a majority of voters support. The medical marijuana bill in New York gained momentum last week after Montel Williams paid a visit to lawmakers urging them to pass it. The Republican leader of the state Senate switched his position after hearing from the talk show host how marijuana helps relieve the painful symptoms of multiple sclerosis. From California, Berkeley goes to initiative, Humboldt takes more time. The failure of political leaders to act on behalf of public consensus on medical marijuana has forced many states and communities to the voter initiative process, putting the issue directly before the people. Even in infamously liberal Berkeley, politicians sometimes resist the recommendations of medical experts, and as a result, an initiative will likely appear in the November ballot. Meanwhile, Humboldt County is taking more time to work on its own medical marijuana ordinance. From New Zealand, experts to meet with government officials. Both New Zealand and Australia are contemplating allowing medical use of marijuana. Officials in New Zealand have asked experts from around the world to come down and advise them on how best to proceed. This news has been provided by Americans for Safe Access, a national coalition of 10,000 patients, doctors, and advocates. Americans for Safe Access is the largest organization working solely on medical marijuana. One last story comes to us from The Lancet, the most prestigious medical journal on planet Earth. It's titled, Better Research Needed to Assess Psychological Social Effects of Cannabis. Authors of a study conclude that more evidence is required to determine the nature and extent of the association between cannabis use and negative sociological outcomes. The use of cannabis and other illicit drugs by young people is linked to sociological harm, including health problems. The use of other illegal drugs, reduced educational attainment, and antisocial behavior. However, whether these associations are causal, example, cannabis use is a direct cause of psychological illness and antisocial behavior, remains unclear. John McLeod of the University of Birmingham in the UK and colleagues reviewed general population longitudinal studies reporting associations between illicit drug use by young people and psychosocial harm. They identified 48 relevant studies, of which the most reliable evidence came from 16 studies. In general, consistent associations were identified between cannabis use and both lower educational attainment and increased use of other illicit drugs. Less consistent associations were found between cannabis use and psychological health problems and problematic behavior. Dr. McLeod comments, quote, despite widespread concern, we have found no strong evidence that use of cannabis in itself has important consequences for psychological or social health. The finding is not equivalent to the conclusion that use of cannabis is harmless in psychosocial terms. Problems with the available evidence render it equally unable to support this proposition. Better evidence is needed in relation to cannabis, which is widely used, and in relation to other drugs that, although less widely used, might have important effects. In an accompanying commentary, Franco Grotherman from the Nova Institute of Germany states, there is some reason to believe that cannabis contributes to psychosocial problems in adolescents and young adults, and no responsible adult would want young people to take drugs. There is no question that this issue is an important candidate for education and prevention, but there is fierce debate on the place repressive measures should have in this context. There is little reason to believe that criminalization has had a strong effect on the extent of cannabis use by young people. Moreover, prohibition itself seems to increase the harmfulness of drug use and cause social harms. By stopping all cannabis users from being treated as criminals, I believe this year's change by the British government of its cannabis laws is a sensible attempt to balance the possible harms caused by cannabis and its prohibition. We must learn to deal with drugs and their possible dangers without fear. Okay, so now I think we'll go ahead and play some excerpts from that fine show produced out of Canada, the Bill Good Show, with a substitute host, Peter Warren, and their panel of guests, Kurt Atusa, Eugene Oscapella, Keith Straup, and out of Amsterdam, Dr. Peter Cohen. The first voice you'll hear is Keith Straup, the head of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws here in the U.S.
Well, I do think people are listening, Peter. I think that the proposal for decriminalization in Canada, decriminalizing, I think, up to 15 grams they're talking about, is a potentially powerful proposal because I think it's going to have an impact not just in Canada but also in the United States. As you probably know, there are many countries in Western Europe that have stopped arresting marijuana smokers a long time ago, and in fact in Holland, you can buy marijuana legally in several hundred coffee shops throughout the country. So the move in marijuana policy around the world is not towards the American get tough policy of locking everyone up. In this country, we arrested over 700,000 people last year on minor marijuana charges. At least 88% of those were for simple possession of marijuana only. But the direction of most of the rest of the world is to treat responsible marijuana smoking as an activity that an individual has a right to do as long as they do it in a responsible manner.
Now, Professor Cohen, what are the rules, regulations, and what's happening in Amsterdam?
In Amsterdam, like in about 100 municipalities in the Netherlands, you can buy marijuana up till 5 grams per person in a total of around 800 shops that have a wide variety of marijuanas and hashishes from all over the world. And the rules are that you cannot enter this shop if you're not 18, and you cannot buy more than 5 grams, and it is not allowed to make a lot of, how do you say, publicity about marijuana. So in the Dutch television you will not see publicity for marijuana or tobacco or alcohol.
Kirk, where does civil liberties get in here?
Well, the Civil Liberties Association has argued for at least 30 years since the time of the Ledain Commission in the late 1960s that cannabis should be legal, it should be regulated, we can take the black market out of the business, we can eliminate all the major harms associated with prohibition by bringing this product that millions of Canadians enjoy and enjoy responsibly out of the black market and into the light of day. And the Civil Liberties Association believes it's essentially a matter of freedom. It's a matter of giving Canadians the right to make responsible decisions about what they choose to put into their bodies. And in a free country, I think that's one of the kind of fundamental rights that we all enjoy.
Mr. Oscapella, you're the founding member, a founding member of the Foundation for Drug Policy. What is the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, and where are you at in all of this?
Okay, we are essentially a drug policy think tank. We're independent of government, which has enabled us, like many other independent organizations, to take a principled stand rather than a politically expedient stand on this issue. Now, our basic position is that prohibition, which is the model we use for marijuana right now, the using the criminal law to prohibit the possession, production, sale, importation, export of cannabis, is a fundamentally flawed policy in that it causes far more harm than it prevents. It not only is it, it's not like some government policies that don't do any good at all. This one actually causes positive harm. So it's not just a waste of money, it's actually making the situation worse. And we're financing criminal organizations in Canada and around the world. We're wasting enormous police resources in areas that could be used otherwise. We're fostering violence. We're giving people dishonest education about cannabis, and so that they don't trust other messages about other drugs. We lack quality control. We're intruding on people's privacy, certainly, and interfering with how they conduct their own, you know, how they conduct the management or how they manage their own bodies. There are a lot of problems with the current system, and that's essentially the position that we've taken, is looking for, you know, we want to look for alternatives to the present system that diminish or minimize or dispel with the harms associated with the current system.
Okay, we're going to take just a 1 minute break here, and we'll be right back with our panel discussion. It's time to play Name That Drug by its Side Effects. Abnormal dreams, confusion, coughing up blood, decreased sensitivity to stimulation, decreased sex drive, difficulty concentrating, difficulty speaking, hepatitis, impotence, memory loss, and sensitivity to light. Time's up. The answer, Claritin. Another FDA-approved product. I had an occasion to speak to Dr. Jeffrey Guy, the executive chairman of GW Pharmaceuticals in Great Britain, and I mentioned that the U.S. government still thinks that cannabis causes death.
These are, in pharmaceutical terms, very safe materials. They are of low organ toxicity. They're very well tolerated by humans. That has been witnessed by many, many thousand years of human coexistence and ingestion of these materials.
Okay, we're back, and we'll return to our guests, our extracts from the Bill Good Show out of Chorus Radio Network.
Professor Cohen, you've heard from the three Canadians now, and you must look at what's happening in this country and look at it and think, what a bloody mess.
No. I don't think at all it is a bloody mess. What I see in Canada, and I will be happy to talk about this tomorrow with everybody involved, is that people are really and seriously considering alternative systems to prohibition. And that is always difficult, because we are all deeply educated in prohibition. We know so from, let's say, from our early days, and thinking about other ways to deal with drugs, for instance, as we do with alcohol, it's a very difficult step. So what I see happening in Canada is a real and involved and honest discussion about how to do it differently, and certainly how to do it differently than the United States of America. And I applaud this, and that positive results of this cannot be created from one moment to the other is clear. Policy transition is difficult. It involves legal changes. It involves philosophical changes, conceptual changes. In short, it is not easy to change a century-old system into something new. So please don't think that onlookers to Canada think that it is chaotic. No, it is very hopeful.
On the phone, Keith Strupp, executive director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Mr. Strupp, a little bird tells me that you're on the verge of retirement.
Well, that's true, although I expect to stay involved with the organization. For 30 years plus, about 34 years now, Normal has been the voice for marijuana smokers in America. We attempt to make sure that the otherwise law-abiding citizens who smoke marijuana are involved in the public policy process that sets those laws. If marijuana smokers would simply vote their conscience, in other words, there are enough marijuana smokers in my country, and I suspect in Canada too, that we could very easily change these laws if we would simply agree that we would never again vote for an elected official that wants to treat us like a criminal. As you recall, the last presidential election in our country was incredibly close and could have been swung by any state flipping over. And I dare say if the 27 million Americans who smoked marijuana just in the last year, or the 16.5 million Americans who are considered regular smokers by government surveys, if they would take the pledge to never vote for a candidate that wants to treat marijuana smokers like criminals, we could end marijuana prohibition and legalize marijuana in this country within a couple of election cycles, and I suggest the same thing could be done in Canada.
All right, let's have a roundtable discussion before we get to the calls, if we can. What would we, let's start with you. You're in the studio. What are we, just in layman's language, what's the first step here?
The first step towards legalization, I think, is to continue the type of momentum that's been built up over the last several years and really came to a head with the release of the Senate report here in Canada, an exhaustive 18-month study that concluded, listen, we need to legalize cannabis. And I think Keith is dead on. People that smoke and enjoy marijuana and people that believe in freedom, I should point out, should take a pledge that says, the state is not entitled to treat me as a criminal for engaging in behavior that does not harm other people.
Anybody else on the panel want to get in? Please feel free to get in.
Well, Eugene Oscapella here. I agree entirely with Kirk. It's not necessarily, this isn't, often this issue is characterized as a bunch of people who want to sit around and smoke pot. I'm probably amongst the minority of Canadians who've never used pot, but I believe very strongly in the human rights aspects of this. You know, we've got the state interfering with what we put into our bodies, and we've got them mythologizing marijuana. We've got an enormous amount of propaganda about this. We're doing tremendous harm, so we need to sort of, shift away from this. And I agree entirely with Kirk that the Senate committee report, which came out in September of 2002, portrays a very good regulatory model for dealing with cannabis. And you might ask Peter Cohen, and Peter, I'll ask you to comment on the study that was just published, I guess, in the American Journal of Public Health about the impact of different laws. You looked at San Francisco as one model and the Netherlands as another to look at rates of consumption and things like that.
Yeah. No, it's really an interesting thing to compare how many people smoke marijuana in a system where marijuana smoking is a serious offense and also a serious risk for being arrested, versus a system like the Netherlands where marijuana smoking is no longer a criminal act and where you can go into a shop and buy marijuana as often as you wish. And we found not only that the levels of marijuana use in the Dutch population and also in the Amsterdam population are much lower than in the United States, but we also found that the ways in which people use marijuana, which is rather modest in both cities, and most people use it only in weekends and in very small amounts, is extremely similar. So drug policy, which is alleged to have such importance, really does not impact both levels of use in the population, and it does not impact the way in which people deal with drug use. And we have found in an extremely detailed way that patterns of drug use, of cannabis use in this case, and the careers of drug users are strikingly similar between San Francisco and Amsterdam, in spite of the enormous difference in drug policy systems that have reigned there for the last 30 years.
Kirk, if I can jump in, this is Keith from Normal. I would say, too, in the United States, one of the reasons that the current Bush administration is so committed to continuing these horrendous penalties against marijuana is that they really are engaged in a cultural warfare in this country. They have resurrected some of the same issues that we were struggling with back in the late 1960s and early 70s during the Vietnam War era. And for a lot of older Americans, when they think of a marijuana smoker, they think of a young, long-haired hippie burning his draft card during the Vietnam War and frequently smoking a joint in the park.
Yep.
Now, those were never accurate impressions even back in the late 60s. They certainly are not today. But I fear that until we have a new generation of leadership, they're going to continue to fight these cultural wars, and it's going to make it impossible for us to set these issues aside. Well, in the United States alone, we lose about 50,000 people a year to alcohol overdose and directly from alcohol, cirrhosis of the liver, things like that. We lose about 450,000 people a year from tobacco smoking, and there's never been a person in the history of mankind who's died from an overdose of marijuana, and the studies that have tried to estimate what it would take estimate you'd have to eat something like 1,500 pounds of marijuana at one sitting. It obviously could not be done. So the caller is absolutely right. It's incredibly hypocritical. critical for us to outlaw marijuana, but legalize and advertise and encourage the use of two far more dangerous drugs.
Yeah, I have to echo that, and maybe there should be a double standard in terms of tobacco, alcohol versus marijuana, but the double standard should be a recognition that tobacco and alcohol are very, very, very dangerous substances, and marijuana isn't.
Hey, gentlemen, don't exaggerate. These drugs are not so very... Tobacco and alcohol can be dangerous under certain patterns of use in high frequencies, high dosages.
Sure.
That's not exaggerate. They're dangerous. And there's another thing. Even if people want to use these products in a way that is dangerous for them, I see this as their own choice. If I want to go scuba diving, which is a known, highly dangerous sport, this is the risk that I take for myself. And so even if it were true that alcohol or tobacco were so dangerous as the people here in this forum now say, still, I would consider it not the business of the state to mingle in the choice to use them.
Oh, Peter, absolutely. This is Kirk again. I completely agree with you. I suggest, and as the caller, Peter, mentioned, this really is a kind of a shrinking of democracy when we prohibit choices that are, in fact, generally harmful only to the individual making the choice. I mean, we have to put aside the issue of impaired driving because clearly that can pose risks to others than yourself. But that's illegal in any case. That has really nothing to do with the consumption of the substance itself, which, if harmful, is only going to harm you. In a free country, these are choices that we should allow our citizens to make for themselves.
Yeah, but I'm happy that we are discussing the concept of harm because, as some of you have already said, we live in a kind of propaganda war, also a culture war, in which the harms of particular drugs are incredibly amplified. They are not really true, but the terms that people choose to describe them are simply nonsensical. And this reminds me of a sad episode in European history. Shortly ago, we had all these fights within the former Yugoslavia. And for instance, the Serbs were encouraged to fight the Bosnians because the harms of the Bosnians were described as the Bosnians were eating Serbian babies. This is old. These are old images that come from the Middle Ages and that are designed to whip up peoples against each other. And I sometimes think that the incredibly exaggerated terms in which harms of alcohol or tobacco or heroin or marijuana are described have no other purpose than to make people afraid and to keep them away from knowing what is really happening.
And once again, I want to thank the Bill Good Show, their host Peter Warren, for substituting there. We had Kirk Artusa, Keith Strop, Eugene Oscapella, and Peter Cohen out of Amsterdam. Well, we're out of time, so once again, I must remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.